to Ganymede and Titan. Yes, sir, I've been around. What's up, Smegheads, and welcome to episode one of Thanks for the Memory, a Red Dwarf podcast, where we rewatch every episode of the BBC comedy show Red Dwarf and discuss them. And I'm who's this American dude talking about this British show? My name is Blake Braswell. I work in the entertainment industry here in the United States, and I have this amazing friend across the pond. Lee, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yo, Blake Braswell, get down. I am Lee Malaby. I'm not even going to discuss my job because no one's interested. It's nowhere near as cool as yours, Blake, let's be honest.
I mean, mine's fun. But you know what? At the end of the day, whenever it is your job, it still becomes a job.
Yeah, true.
That's why we're doing this, to have some fun.
Yeah, but it's interesting because we connected over our love of Red Dwarf on my other podcast. I'm not going to plug it because I kind of want this to stand on my own because we both have our own podcast, and we might do at some point.
I know. I had the same thought. Same exact thought.
I obviously have too much spare time in my life at this point. It's like, why not? Why not reach out to Blake and start another podcast? So I'll never see my wife again because she already complains that I spend too much time on podcasting. And yeah, here we are. And it's something I think we talked about it briefly, haven't we, Blake? Because I think it's 7 years since I last did a rewatch of these.
I don't know. It's longer for me for certain seasons. I think I've seen seven-ish sounds about right for me for a couple of the seasons. But I think especially these early ones, it has been a very long time since I've seen them, which is weird how well I remember them.
Yes.
Good God, do I remember them really well watching them. But then, and I'm excited to get to them, some of the much later ones I actually haven't seen.
Which
I think once you get past season seven, I don't know that I've seen anything.
Wow. And that's because there's 12 altogether.
Yes.
And the last season came out in 2020. It was a one-off hour and a half special, which I'm sure I've seen, but I genuinely don't remember it.
I'm sure there are people listening that are like, have thoughts and about that kind of, you know, the later stuff already. Because obviously, as we will talk about this episode, this show just evolves and evolves. Some people at times probably think it devolves, but you know, like I can't get enough of the boys from the dwarf hanging out together. Doesn't matter. Even when it's not that great, it's like pizza.
Yeah.
I still want it.
Absolutely. It's funny, actually, doing the research on this show, did you know they'd actually done two pilot episodes for the US version?
Oh, dude, I definitely wanted to bring this up in the pod. I have seen, so there is a full pilot that is pretty much this episode, which we'll get into, is the first episode here with a few tweaks.
Okay.
Our favorite android Crichton is actually in the show the whole time. He's in there the whole time.
Spoilers. I hope anyone who's listening that's decided they've never watched Red Dwarf before and watching along for the first time. Spoilers.
You don't know who Crichton is.
No.
Go watch this show.
And you won't for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that note, stop listening and go watch the end.
Yes.
The first episode of this season of Red Dwarf. Well, you know what? Here. So for this particular season, we're doing episode one, The End. And this episode originally aired on February 15th, 1988. I think in the States, it looked like it aired on PBS. And,
yes.
And that is the public broadcasting station. It's kind of like, it's not public access. It's different than that. It's a, you know, PBS is where, as a kid growing up in the States, you're aware of this, but you'd see Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and like all these kind of things in the morning. And I grew up in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. In fact, my mama refers to it as Buzzard Town, North Carolina.
Okay.
And we had three channels. We had, well, let me take it back. We had ABC, NBC, and CBS. And then I had a fourth channel, and that was PBS. And so this is where I'd watch it. Now, I was trying to track down when I would have seen this. Now, this did air, it looks like, maybe in the following March, like of 88, just a month later, in the US. But I think I might have picked up on the Red Dwarf around 90 and 91, because at the second, that would be second and third season, I believe.
Yeah.
They were starting to show, because I think the first episode I ever saw was Waiting for God, which we'll get to that episode.
Yep.
I saw that one first, and then weirdly, the next one I really remember is the second episode of this first season. So I saw things a little out of order, and really, you know, this doesn't happen in this episode, but I got clued in by a certain computer about what the plot of the show even was.
At the beginning of the next episode, then.
Yeah. But it didn't matter because I was trying to figure this out between 10 and 12, somewhere in there. Do the math. Now you know how old Blake is. But I loved Star Wars as a kid. I mean, I still do. But the reason I got into entertainment was Star Wars, but not like I wanted to go be Luke Skywalker. I got obsessed with the making of videos and stuff, right? And like how they made the models, and I wanted to make maquette models and all this jazz. And so when I saw this thing late night on PBS kick on with this shot of, you know, painting the Red Dwarf ship,
yeah,
going back, and this great shot of the Red Dwarf model mining vessel, I was like, what is this? And then it started, and I was like, it's a sitcom in space? But you got to like think, like the idea of this, right, in a post Guardians of the Galaxy world, this like is like, it seems derivative, right? If it came out today. The idea, especially of like a slob who's the star of this thing.
Yeah.
Which again, we'll get into. I'm getting a little ahead of ourselves, but like, it's very, so I'm assuming you watch this like right at the beginning.
I mean, I'm about your age at this point, so my memory is not as good as it was, but I would have been about 12 when this came out, so probably about the right age for it. So I do seem to remember watching it when it first aired over here. But obviously, at the time, it was on Prime TV at like 9 o'clock. That's when everyone was watching it. So I do... It's difficult to throw your mind back that far now, especially having watched it as many times as I have, to actually think about those first memories of it, because it is, like you said before we started recording, even though it's been a while since you've watched it, you still knew every beat of these first two episodes.
And the, like, you beat's the right word, like the timing.
Yeah.
Like, I was giggling the second before things would happen. And it's great because my wife, she loves British comedy, and well, I mean, like, if it's for a while, I think when Netflix was like mailing DVDs and we weren't streaming,
wow,
everything was like a BBC comedy or show or drama that like we were getting for quite some time. So she was like totally down, and so we started watching, and she's watched a bunch of the episodes, but never sat down to see them in order. And yeah. I, to be honest, this will be my first time really going. I'm starting with one and consciously working all the way forward. I don't know if it's safe to say this, when I did work in Japan in 2004 and 5, and you're kind of lonely. I mean, like, I had a great time in Japan, but in the evenings, it's just like this one lone American dude. I was working for an entertainment company out there. The net provided me the ability to go. I remember one night, I haven't seen Red Dwarf in years, because we weren't streaming at this point, right? Yeah. It's 2004. Yeah. And so I may have just found some episodes people had left laying around online and I started, but I couldn't get them all. And I remember like in my time in Japan, I rewatched a bunch of them then. But still, so this is definitely the first time, like from beginning to end. You brought up the American pilot. I want to talk a bit about it, but I think we should let you walk us through the plot first, because it ties into that, because they're similar.
Okay. So this is, I got this off IMDb, the plot for the first episode. And I do want to encourage people, if it's been a while since you've watched it, go and watch the episode before you listen. And I'm actually hoping we get some listeners who've never watched it before and will watch along with us. And that's kind of something I wanted to broach before we got to this, Blake. If you're in the UK or you have access to a VPN, it is readily available on the BBC iPlayer. As far as the US, Blake, where can people find it?
So I ended up getting this through Apple TV, but you can do it in like basically all the normal, it's not streaming. Yeah, I had to purchase it, but I purchased on Apple TV. It's on Amazon. It's been on Netflix to stream before,
yes,
but it's not now. I will say, as we discovered, Lee was talking to me about the song that was in this episode. I was like, I don't remember that song, but due to rights issues with music, things like that, there are some slight differences that you will encounter.
But that's not a US British thing, because we watched it on, when we first got Netflix probably 20 years ago, we rewatched it, and Tracy, my wife, was telling me, she said, I remember it being that, so we'll get into it because that's in the trivia, but she said she remembers it being that second song and not the one that I watched in this most recent
rewatch. So, well, that could also mean, and this is the really, here's some inside baseball, because this gets us into the streaming conversation. because people would make shows back in the 80s and 90s with no thoughts that people would ever buy DVDs of seasons, yeah, let alone a world where we'd be streaming them. These companies didn't pay for perpetual rights for songs and stuff. So I think, like, if you go back and watch Dawson's Creek right now and you grew up with it, it's really weird because none of the songs are, you're like, wait, where's the, it's all these, there were all these pop songs in the 90s that were in it. I feel like they might even drop some money to make a new run on DVD or Blu-ray to do it. So the man, I'm going to tell you, in the entertainment world, dealing, especially when you're like me and you produce stuff, the rights for music. And I'm a member of ASCAP, the Composer Society. Don't get me wrong, I appreciate this fact, but yeah, it is a pain dealing with the rights for that kind of stuff. They're limited time, they expire. So anyway,
yes,
I look forward to other things I'm going to discover that are different that I never knew were different.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's where the benefit of us being from two very different continents will make this a very much more interesting discussion, I think. But anyway, the premise for this is Dave Lister and Arnold Rimmer are technicians on board the mining ship Red Dwarf. They loathe each other. I think loathe is an understatement, but I'm sure we'll get into that more. Being polar opposites personality-wise, due to being placed in stasis for an infringement, Lister finds himself the only survivor of the crew after a freak accident. He is not alone. Unfortunately for him, Rimmer is still around as a hologram. There's also the descendant of the cat he smuggled on board the ship, which evolved into a human form over the 3 million years since the accident. And that's, yeah, that is basically putting it in the tiniest little nutshell and leaving out all the nuances of this episode completely.
But what's nuts is this is, I forgot how much this episode, and it's probably one of the ones I've seen the least, just in replays that would pop up. Because again, these back in the old days when you couldn't DVR, yep, things, and you just caught it as you could. And coming from Britain to the America, I don't even know that PBS showed things in correct order.
Wow.
You know, I have no idea. It's wild how literally, I mean, the plot of this episode is the synopsis for the entire show.
Yeah.
Minus a character that'll show up later.
Yeah.
And you just forget, like, as I'm watching, oh yeah, oh yeah, that, oh, like all these things that get established. And I think that was something that struck me as different because at the time, again, now, especially as you mentioned, if we've got people that are new to Red Dwarf and might be watching it for the first time, the idea that there's a sitcom with a continuing story, it's not literally, you know, like a modern Doctor Who or, yeah, something that literally like care, but it did build, it continued to build. Whereas I was used to sitcoms that were like, here's the setup. You know, here are these three friends that, yeah, run a pizza shop and yada yada, whatever. And it's just the same every week, different scenario,
yeah,
right? Literally, situational comedy. That's Blake's trivia. That's where sitcom comes from, if you don't know. And this kind of built on itself. And I, to be honest, I'm very excited, as we'll talk about the second episode,
yes,
and in a subsequent episode of this podcast, how fast we keep building on relationships.
Yeah, the next episode for definite.
Oh yeah, and it's so fast. You know, and that's something else to mention. So if you're, this won't matter if you're from the UK. If you're from the United States and you're new to following like any BBC shows like this, these seasons are short. They only get like 6 episodes,
yeah,
a season.
I was surprised.
And I'm so used to in the States where you got to do 22 episodes. And I think, and maybe you can help translate across the pond, I have had a thought in my head as to why maybe I do enjoy the BBC style or the British style of putting television together. In that you guys, so in the States, it must be a guaranteed hit because we're going to pay for the money to do 22 episodes.
Yes.
So they'll put pilots together, like the American one of this, which we'll talk about. And they'll tweak it and tweak it and tweak it and test audience till it's quote unquote perfect for, which a lot of times means lowest common denominator, and boom, it goes out. You know, and we get a lot of sitcoms that are kind of forgettable, and then every now and then you get like a Cheers or a MASH if you want to go back further, even though that's kind of a different vibe.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, it seems like you guys do these shorter runs so you can experiment, and they don't have to go, we have to make enough money to do 22 episodes. We can do 6, see how this works. It's almost like a first season is a little more than a pilot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You've actually got me thinking. I'm trying to think of very specifically British sitcoms that have that longer seasons, and I can't think of any, because like if you think about more modern stuff like Ricky Gervais, the Ricky Gervais stuff he's done, like Extras and Afterlife and Derek, they're only like, he's only ever done two seasons of anything because he always said he doesn't want it to get dragged out and get watered down like some of, like, arguably, I suppose, the American stuff. He wants his seasons to go out on a high. But then going back to something like Red Dwarf, I think you're probably right. Let's just see what we can do, put it out there, see what people think of it. Because I think if you look, a thought I had in my head very much, the first two seasons have a very different feel from the rest of them. Because I think after season two, that's when it took off and they got a budget. And then it became a much...
Obviously.
Yeah, you can tell. But it became a much bigger spectacle, whereas the first two seasons, it's pretty much all set on Red Dwarf in like six rooms at most. And it's all about the writing. The writing is very clever and very strong. And then once the end of season two happens and you go into season three, it became this much bigger... They started going to different planets and locations and stuff, and it became this bigger thing. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it is that of like, why try and push this to be perfect right from the start and do 24 episodes? Let's just chuck six out, see what people think of it. And if it works, then we'll do a few more. And then if it continues, then we'll see where we're at. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
And the other thing that happens is they get time with this cast and they start, like, there's moments in this, in the second episode, where you go, oh, you see where some of the staple things that you expect from these characters or the way you might anticipate their reactions are just under the surface.
Yep.
And you can see where, you know, the writers and the show directors go, oh, and they start to figure out, you know, you already tell the next season, they're not writing these characters. They're writing these characters played by these guys.
Yes.
You know, like it's a much different vibe, and they lean into the strengths and they understand where people, you know, what they're strong with and stuff. Like Chris Berry, right? Rimmer, he was like an impressionist, and they try to use that. I forgot they tried to use that in this first season because he was well known for his impressions, and that kind of starts to go away, I think, after the second season.
Which, I'll be honest, I love it when he imitates Lister. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I think that's the other thing is it was hard for me because, you know, one of the questions we've got as we get along with this show, Lee asked we do a rating for the show, and I almost have to do two because I have one through the lens of knowing the whole show.
Yes.
And then one that's like, okay, on an individual basis, how do I look at this?
That's a good point.
And because it feels slowly paced. And I'm thinking as a kid is what caught me off guard with these early episodes. It felt so different. I literally felt like I was watching something foreign. What do they say? What's that quote? America and England, two countries separated by the same language.
And it's true.
There is a pacing that's different. And it's funny. I used to live in Canada and I would watch sitcoms and go, oh my God, it's different here too. And everybody kind of has their own like thing, you know? And then you start to question yourself going, well, wait, is it the society that intrinsically makes the different pacing, or is it what the people who make the entertainment make us expect? And I'm not sure, chicken or egg, which one of those is first. But this has a slow pacing compared to American sitcoms at the time, where the most important thing is you get to know who these people are.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've been looking doing the research about Red Dwarf and finding out one of the reasons I came across, I think it was a Reddit board last night, of why Red Dwarf never really took off in the US. And it's interesting, and I completely agree, because all the characters aren't particularly nice people.
Which is funny because the British office was popular here, and I would argue
that surprises
that had a similar vibe. It,
very much.
Yeah.
But it seemed to be that, Tracy and I, my wife, we've just finished watching the American office for the first run, and the feel of the American office is very different to the British one. Like in, I know we're going off topic here, but in the British office, David Brent is a, he is a complete asshole. Let's just put it that way, right? He really is.
He's a complete and utter smeghead.
Yes.
Is what you meant to say. Yes. That'll keep us on topic.
And then Michael Scott in the American Office, he kind of starts off that way, but he never quite hit those lows that David Brent does. And then by the time he comes to leave, he's like, you love him as a character. And it seems to be that American people don't generally, in sitcoms, warm to sort of darker characters, shall we say, like people who aren't necessarily an underdog or, you know, a hero, anti-heroes. They don't tend to warm to, at least this is what this thread I was reading was saying.
Well, see, now, you know, I didn't know we'd go this direction, but you're making my brain, like my theater background script analytical, because I did, now that you say that, while watching it, I'm like, man, how can you just not love Lister? You're onto something, because this thing drops in the States in the 80s and early 90s. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I'm no sociological, I can't even say the word apparently, professor. But in America, a lot of times we like, especially at that time period, we wanted to see what we thought we are. We want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger with two guns under each hand, yeah. Like, you know, blazing away at the bad guys or whatever. You know what I mean? And we didn't want to like analyze like some realities. I think today a character like Lister, an American equivalent, is actually a huge hero. Well, we said Guardians of the Galaxy, right? The Andy Dwyer type that Chris Pratt, you know, kind of brought into that role with Star-Lord. Like, you could see Lister totally working out. An unredeemable slob, but right now in our media, we focus on like, well, why is he that way? Oh, because he grew up this way or this, like,
yeah.
And it's kind of like you mentioned with The Office. On the American version, you get a longer time with the character and you start to understand why he is the way he is. And it's not that he sucks because he's a bad person. The system kind of made him a bad middle manager, as I don't know if you've ever noticed. The system tends to do. Like, what is that phrase, people getting promoted to the height of their inadequacy or whatever, you know? So I it's funny because I do think this idea would work more now, yes, in the States than it did then, if that makes sense.
But do you think that's because British humor is more accepted in the US now than it used to be? It's weird because a lot of Americans don't understand British humor. It was one of those things that when we discussed starting this, that I wanted you to bring up to me anything that you didn't quite understand or jokes that missed, because it is a very British show.
So I will say, yes, when I was saying that, I meant if you did a USA version of Red Dwarf now, I think you could kind of keep some of that. But even if you relaunched a new version that was British in the States now, I think it would work. So I think this is one of the reasons as a little kid I stopped and watched it. So full disclosure, when you don't have cable and you've got your four channels, and it late at night, they all are just the news, the national news, whatever. As a kid, it would switch from regular TV. Let's say I was up late watching, I don't know, Cheers or whatever. And whatever show ends between 10 and 11 on a Friday night. And then I would get switched to PBS and Are You Being Served would be on.
Okay.
And then later it would be Are You Being Served, followed by 11:30 on Friday nights, Red Dwarf. And I think part of it was, again, I grew up in Buzzardtown, North Carolina. This is so different. And I didn't get turned off by not understanding something. I wanted to
understand it.
No.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what does that mean? You know? It's funny watching it now, because I'm watching going, oh, I thought that was a different word, but now I've seen enough, have enough friends in the UK that I know what that is now. Do you know what I mean? But I remember being a kid thinking, oh, I thought he said something different.
Yeah.
And I think there was something like that made that fun. What was the other British show that played? What's the one about the guy in World War II in France who runs a bar and he's got all these ladies are part of the... Yes. That was the other one that was on. Right. And so, I don't know. There's something to be said for lack of choice, it piquing your creativity, yes, or like interest. You know, I'm like, I don't understand this and I want to get it. So my mom and would be like, all right, as long as it's PBS, since that's who shows Sesame Street and stuff, whatever, you can stay up late on Fridays and watch that. Well, here I am watching this stuff. And then, which, you know, was like the gateway drug into Monty Python and everything else. And I think the pacing is part of it. I think how different it was, the fact that there was, to bring up Star Wars, the design of this ship and the interior is very not Star Trek, which I believe Next Generation is contemporary to this starting. I think that fired off at the same time.
Yeah.
And Star Trek is a very clean look. I love Next Generation. We can do a podcast on that. We're done with this if you want to. Very clean. And this is very dirty. This is more that Star Wars lived in vibe.
Yeah,
and
so it feels like the interior of the Nostromo from Alien.
Bingo, Blake's favorite horror movie. Yes. And I think all those things just sucked me in, and I didn't care about the cultural difference. And to be honest, because, you know, pre-internet and everything else, this would be like, well, if I want to learn more about England, I guess I'll do it through the Red Dwarf and Are You Being Served?
The only difference between those two TV shows is that Red Dwarf won't get cancelled. Are You Being Served? You probably can't watch it anymore.
It's true. You know, and I'm sure we're going to hit something in Red Dwarf and go, oh, that's a little problematic.
Probably.
But I don't remember it being, like you said, some things, Are You Being Served? Very of its time, yes, shall we say? But it was interesting. The funny thing is, my best friend in school, I went to this one school till I was like in eighth or ninth grade. And then in ninth grade, I moved to a slightly larger area, not quite Buzzard Town, North Carolina. Maybe it's Cactus Town. Who knows? And then I was at a much larger school. But at the prior school, my friend's mom was the librarian at that school. And I discovered around about the same time, Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay. Book.
And I think it might have been Red Dwarf that set me off. And then when I discovered at the library, this is a funny book about space by a British guy.
Yep.
And then I found like her daughter had read it, and then she watched Red Dwarf. And my last year, there was a costume contest. Dude, I might have shown up in a black leather bomber coat with a cap and yarn off the back of the nice cap to look like Lister's dreads. And of course, no one knew who I was at my school for... in Halifax, North Carolina, as Dave Lister.
I mean, you say that now, it's funny, it's interesting. I put a post on Facebook just trying to sort of gauge among my Facebook friends, you know, who knew and liked Red Dwarf, because my Facebook friends list is probably 50% British people and 50% American people at this point. And it's funny, a friend of mine posted, a British friend has Lister's red 0G soccer team t-shirt, and she says she wears it all the time and no one has any idea what it is.
Oh, this pod's going to cost me money because I've already been looking up Red Dwarf t-shirts, and I did find one for the Jets for the 0G football team. I was like, I might have to get that.
But yeah, it's really weird, those cultural differences, and it doesn't surprise me that it didn't take off in the US as much as it did over here.
I got one for you. Who's Gordon Bennett? I love the way it sounds when they use it as like almost a curse.
So I don't necessarily know whether Gordon Bennett is a person. I'm sure the etymology comes from something at some point, but it's basically just a child-friendly way of saying for f***ing sake, basically.
Gotcha. I can't go. Well, I mean, which is like contextually totally how it comes across. Mind you, now, in these early episodes, you do get the, like, we get our, he's such a smeghead.
Yes.
And I don't even remember in the second episode if that word is dropped, but that becomes ubiquitous with the show.
Yeah.
I had no idea what that meant as a kid. At all. At all. And so I just was like, it was like I could curse without getting in trouble, right? And I use smeg all the time. And it was a very long time where I learned, like, oh, that's what that means.
But it's really clever of them to reach out to a bigger audience by not having traditional swears in there and create their own that doesn't really mean anything. It's like there's one in the second episode, and I can't wait to talk about it, because my favorite line in that second episode, the word goit makes me howl. I find it hilarious.
That's one of my questions for the next episode. Yep, I wonder.
I don't think it's a real word. I think they made it up.
See, this is why I love your people, Lee. You invented the English language and you keep inventing it. You're like, whatever, we'll make more clever ways to say stuff that annoys us.
But it's just that was one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about this, like rewatching it again. There's times when I'm watching it in hindsight, you look now and you think, what age bracket was this actually aimed at? Because there are sex references in there, but then there's some really sort of childish, puerile humor in there that doesn't fit with a lot of the other stuff. So it's the second episode, so I'm not going to get into that. But it just that some of the humor is very strange.
I do think, because I, like I said, I went and did the research and went, well, I don't think I watched this when I was eight. I probably, because I have so many memories of the second and third season earlier, that it probably was, I was watching them in reruns starting around 92.
Yeah.
Which puts me around 12 years old, which, again, to go to the George Lucas reference, George said that he was squarely making this for like 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds. Well, I was just a little older than that, and I feel like... whether they meant to or not, squarely aimed at my forehead.
Okay.
Because of what you just said.
Yeah.
Like, you're just starting to learn a few things, and so that stuff is, like, really taboo and funny, or you laugh at it because you know it's about sex, even though you don't really understand what it is, but, you know? But you're like, hoo-hoo-hoo, here I am. Especially because for us, it played it late at night on a Friday, you know? But that is it's weird. Now I can't stop drawing the straight line from that to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Because I'd almost make the same argument, right? Look at the last Guardians of the Galaxy. How deep and emotional that stuff with Rocket was.
Yeah.
And like, that was heavy stuff. So heavy that my daughter loves Rocket. She can't watch that yet.
No.
But yet, there are some absolutely just puerile jokes in that thing.
Yeah. I always go back to the first Guardians of the Galaxy. As someone who has dealt with the loss of a parent due to cancer, that opening scene, I was in tears sat in the cinema. And then it switches from that to him with his headphones on, kicking little alien creatures across the planet, having an absolute blast. And I was like, whoa, what is going on?
I think this is where the show would hit now. Because, you know... there's this weird thing. People go, oh man, the 50s, things were so squeaky clean here. No, they weren't. Your media was.
Yes.
The media was very, you know, Leave It to Beaver and stuff. We weren't showing what happened behind the doors with the Beaver's parents and stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so it was this sort of sanitized version. And the further along you go, the more like we start to go, maybe we look at reality a little bit more. I mean, heightened reality. And I do think this hits that, because I think it's where Guardians of the Galaxy hits so hard, because I mean, as someone himself who was not through cancer, but a degenerative disease, lost a parent, you go through these like totally normal moments and then not normal moments. And so when you see like something like that, Guardians of the Galaxy, that now you're like, God, that's so real.
Yeah.
Even though in the story, you're seeing him as a kid and then the adult right after. But even that feeling of the really low to the really high next to each other, that's totally life.
Yeah, I guess.
And I think there is a world. Lee, let's get some venture capitalists with us and talk to the owners of Red Dwarf. I think this thing could totally hit now. Like, you could totally hit now, because there is a sadness to Lister that as a child I didn't get. But as you watch this episode, my only picture of my dad and like my grand, and there's the funny, oh, there's one I didn't know as a kid. My grand nutted the guy in the head because I failed French. I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know that meant a headbutt. I was like, what does that mean? Threw a nut at the guy's head?
Yeah.
I had no idea. And then I started watching soccer, football, and I went, oh, that's what that means.
Yeah.
There we go. But there's a sadness that isn't addressed. Well, I mean, a little bit with him.
Yeah.
Like, but there is like an... like even his like, it's my dream. And you're like, as a kid, I'm like, that's dumb. Now here I am as an adult watching this going, oh man, I know that. I know that feeling in your young 20s. And like, you know, you don't really know what your world's going to be. And you're like, this is what I think is my ultimate life goal or whatever. And so I think this thing is totally relevant in a way if you represented it now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with Rimmer when I can't remember if it's this episode or the second one. I think it's this one where he's talking about he didn't have the right parents, he didn't have the right knobby background, and like who he is completely shaped by his upbringing. And you find out that more as we're going to get through.
Well, in the second episode, there's another layer on top of that gets dropped as a joke. But you're like, ooh, that's yeah, not good.
You're right, actually.
So I do think that's why it is. And at the time, I wouldn't have realized it. But now I'm like watching it going, man, that's what I think is why I like this show. Like, as crazy as this situation is, and this is what's good writing, these guys are kind of relatable.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's the cat. who, if you had cats, I guess is relatable. Because I just remember, like, especially because I didn't watch the first episode first, but then understanding, like in the intro when evolved from the ship's cat, and then see the person, you're like, oh, yeah, that's a cat in human form.
Yep. Yeah. Like, I mean, some of the best lines that, I know we're not getting into those questions yet, but one of my favorite lines in the whole thing is when he finds out he's been in stasis for 3 million years. He says, 3 million years? I've still got that library book.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
And that's so British, that humor as well. Like, we do that just normally. It's not even a sitcom thing. That's exactly how we are in everyday life.
Yeah. It's such a like a downplay of the actual hugeness of something with such a minor thing, which again, I totally shaped by that humor as a young kid picking up Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, like, this dude's house is about to get knocked over and he's like, I could never get the hang of Thursdays.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, you know, here's this huge thing. And what is it? When the earth actually blows up in that book, he never cries until he thinks about the fact that he can never go to McDonald's again. Love it. And whatever that is, whatever that very British humor is, I love it. Oh my God. I love it. And it's so hard. And if you're an American that gets into the opportunity to make entertainment, it's so hard because you want to bring that kind of humor in because you love it so much, but it's very hard to get someone to play it as an American.
Yeah.
I cheated for a while. I used to write scripts for comedy shows at a Renaissance fair where people did bad British accents. So I use that as an excuse to put those kind of jokes in, like left and right. But, I just love it, you know. And it harkens, it's fun to watch this too, because I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and Doctor Who's changed so much. And I don't actually mean that in a bad way. Like, I've really enjoyed it, but I can tell compared to when I was a kid watching Tom Baker, they are making sure that the international audience gets this.
Very too. Much. It's not Americanized, but it's definitely got that more polished feel of something that would be much more palatable outside of the UK.
Which means I do really appreciate when they still go out of their way to like make a big deal about the UK or still put stuff in there. Cause you know, like, that's cool. Cause you know, that's them going, we have to do this. Yeah. This has to be in here, but they're not taking for granted, I guess, this is the only people that are watching.
I suppose the other thing of that was that Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, it was still very British, but you could feel that it would appeal to a much wider audience.
Absolutely. And it's funny, it I think was influenced by some American procedural type shows, and then it influenced American procedural type shows. And there was this moment where there was a bunch of shows that you're like, man, I think this one was first, and then Sherlock was next, but then it started borrowing from Sherlock, and they all started kind of spinning in a circle.
And that shows you again what I was talking about with the characters, that Sherlock is the most unlikable person you're ever likely to meet, and yet you adore him.
Yes, if you write it well, as the books are written, he sucks as a human, but he doesn't. When you start to figure out what the deal is with him, it doesn't make him more palatable necessarily in the moment, but you understand where he comes from. You know, I think the defining moment for that, it actually for Americans, comes in science fiction, in the popularity of the launch of Battlestar Galactica. Don't know if you've ever watched all those.
Nope.
But highly recommend it. If you've never seen those, Lee, we're going to just keep doing podcasts about sci-fi shows. Oh, yeah. it does a thing that at the time, I don't remember other American shows doing, in that people you hated, and you would get to season 3 and find out something about them and go,
okay, because you understand why they are the way they are.
I love them now.
Okay.
And now that I feel like that's a very normal thing that happens in our media.
This is going where I never expected this podcast to go where it is currently going, by the way.
Yeah, we're going to have to, I know, we have to advertise it. This got a deeper dive than I think. And it might be because it is the first episode.
It is, without a doubt.
And you're looking at it from the lens of, and I don't just mean our first episode, but also the Red Dwarf's first episode, in that why the beginnings of why this works, why wouldn't it work? Why didn't it work in the States at the time? I mean, it worked enough that PBS did keep it going and showed all of them all the way through season 7, I believe. They might have gone a little after, but I moved and went to university, whatever, and so I kind of fell off track and then went back. So I'm not sure, but you can't help but look at it through like all those lenses. Yeah. And there, and I guess being older coming to it, there is a sadness with Rimmer and with Lister. And, you know, I think with Kat, as the time goes, even, you know, that their situation sucks. And that is the parallel with like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? You're literally following this comedic romp after this dude, Earth, your home is gone.
Yeah.
Like, but it's, you're having a great time. And this, everyone's dead. Everyone's dead, Dave. Yes, Dave. Everyone's dead. God, that bit is so great.
And that goes at British humor again when Holly's like that. Yes, Dave. They're all dead, Dave. Everybody's dead, Dave. And he's like, are you trying to tell us everyone's dead, Holly? And he's like, yes. Ugh, do you know, we should never let him out.
I felt that was an interesting moment because I wanted to redirect Lister on his delivery. I don't know if you caught this, but when he says his, wait, are you trying to tell me everyone's dead? He delivers that different than I argue he would have done via season 3 and a Ford.
Okay.
Because there are moments in this show where I can see where the performers will mature as it goes. Because Lister knows he's making a joke and I can feel the performer making a joke. Whereas I almost feel like in later episodes, he'd have been like, wait, are you telling me everybody's like he would in the most earnest way possible. Yeah. I had a friend who got to be King Arthur for the national tour of Spamalot, and Eric Idle came to watch the show one night. He said that was the most nerve wracking thing.
Wow.
But they talked to the cast afterwards and I love, or he talked to the cast afterwards and he said one of the reasons that, and he gave my buddy a compliment, which I was like, dude, he goes, I'll never, this is it. I'm done. I should end my career now. But he said, you're doing what Graham Chapman did. He goes, we were all in this stupid movie. Graham was in Henry V.
Yeah.
And that's why it worked, right? He played it so earnest. And there are just moments in here where I can feel the actor winking at the audience a little bit. And he doesn't do that. It just as he keeps doing the show.
Yeah.
He's living in the role and those moments don't happen. Yes. And it's funny because I was like, I wonder if this will come up because I come out of this performing background and it's something I definitely noticed. There's a couple times I want to go, that's funny. Hey, cut. We'll do this again. Can you try?
Yeah.
Because it's the difference between this is funny and what the show will become where you're like, God, there are some episodes later where it's like, how do you get past the live audience because they can't move forward because everything is just hitting at the right time and they know each other's timing and, you know, like it's so awesome. And it was, and I don't know if you caught any moments like that.
Well, it's interesting because it's something I have got down in my show notes kind of feeding off that was Captain Hollister plays it entirely straight, entirely. Even when it's ridiculous, the things when he drags Lister in his office and he's like, where's the cat? And he's like, what cat? Like the cat that you even took a picture of yourself with and got developed at the ship's photographic department. And he's like, I still haven't got a cat. He still plays that. The captain still plays that whole role completely straight, even though everything around him is ridiculous. And it does make a difference. Like you say, I think in once Craig Charles sort of learns who Lister is, he probably would have played it different because they know they're making a sitcom in that first episode, whereas later on, as you say, they're inhabited those characters a little bit more.
Well, that scene in particular is what to me made it stand out because that scene feels the most like later Dwarf.
Yeah.
I didn't put that two and two together, but you're right. It's because Hollister plays it so straight. He's the only American in the cast.
Yep. As far as I'm aware, the only one that has a speaking role, at least.
And he's great. I wonder if we'll see him again as we keep watching these.
I can't remember, to be fair.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're watching along, we'll all figure it out if it happens.
It's just because another thing I wanted to ask you was like, as far as, and it's difficult because we know this episode so well, but for someone coming into Red Dwarf and this being the first episode you've watched, how well do you feel that this, and we've kind of already touched on it, how well do you feel this episode does in it? And it's 29 minutes long, you know, that's it, of setting up the characters that you're going to be moving forward with and telling, setting the scene of what it, the whole show is about.
So, should we move to our ratings?
Okay.
Because I kind of put that, I know we've got some, we have some trivia and stuff if we want to go through, but you have our three questions toward the end of yes. the pod, and mine kind of okay. is what you just asked. All right. Look, we'll do a U-turn. Takes 4,000 years to make a turn with this shit. We'll do a slight U-turn.
Nice reference.
And then talk about some of the fun trivia. So we had the, well, I guess this rate out of 10. We can still save, I guess, our other two questions for the end. We'll go back to our trivia after this.
But okay.
I feel like I have to give my rating off of your question. I cheated and wrote 2. I wrote 8 out of seeing the foundations being built for everything that I know will come. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was wrapped in a warm, cozy blanket. I wrote a 6 if you just took this thing out of context.
Okay.
Because the pacing is a little off. It's a little slow. And again, I'm doing it from the viewpoint of I made this and put this out for people here to watch and go, do you want to see more? Right? And while I think if I do it from an American point of view, I think more people are into like British shows and stuff. I don't think actually any of the Gordon Bennetts will throw anybody off.
No.
But it is a little slow. And it's a little slow. And I think the moment that I realized like, if I was doing this, if I could just tweak a couple of things, I think this particular episode would be hotter for me.
Yeah.
I lied. We're going to keep going with our questions because this leads me to the first question. What was your standout character? Well, hold on. Wait, I'm a jerk. What was your rating?
See, I feel like I'm being coerced into giving it a slightly different rating because of yours now. This is why you are the perfect person to be on this show with, because you are much more articulate than I am. As far as setting the scene for what is to come, I don't think it could be any better. You learn exactly who Lister is. You learn exactly who Rimmer is. You know exactly who Holly is. And you know exactly who the Cat is by the end of this episode. And bearing in mind that Holly's barely in it, the Cat's in it for like the last 3 minutes, yet you still know all of those characters. And it's interesting that the fifth sort of mainstay character we don't even get introduced to for like another 2 seasons, I think it is. Like, he comes in in season 2.
Yes, yeah.
But then doesn't become a main cast member until season 3, I think, which is really weird. And I forgot that even happened. I think it does the perfect job of giving you an idea of this is the show. Like, if you think the pilot's going to be different and everything else is going to be different from the pilot, no, this is exactly what the show is. Yes, it's going to evolve over the next 30 years or however long it's been between. I think the last episode came out in like 2020. So this is a show that's managed to go for
22 years it went? Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy. It's crazy. No,
I did the math wrong because I didn't want to say how old
32 I am. Years.
32, yeah, yeah.
Wow. I'm going to give it a solid 8, I think.
And that's what from that viewpoint, that was my feeling. Like it was a strong 8. If I had to do it out of context, because I was really consciously trying to, in my first episode, not think about what I'd talk about in the show. Just, I haven't seen this in a long time. Let me just watch this.
Yeah.
And also kind of gauge my wife's reaction. And I will say some things I thought were paced a little weird, or this could be better or will get better. Because also a big thing, they don't know how to work with a live studio audience yet. They kind of talk over the laughter and stuff. And so you can see in later seasons because at some point they lose the studio audience, but you can feel the performers getting better at working with the yes. timing after the laughs and let it die and do this, which is a typical thing. I've directed shows, performers that are comedies, and that opening couple of shows where they're not used to where the audience will really laugh or not, it takes a second to feel that that vibe of when you should now continue with whatever you're doing, so the audience doesn't. And in this show, it's important because it's like joke, 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 joke as they go. But she was laughing, and she thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's so weird, by the way, to see a TV show, a comedy now, like with a live audience. It's so weird because you just don't get that anymore.
Yeah, what were they giggling? When the show starts, they're giggling. Nothing's really happened. Lister's just singing, and they're just like, there's one lady who's like losing it. I mean, can we find her and get her on the pod? Who was that? Like,
it's so weird.
I love it. So then my rating or how I felt about the show lines up into the first question. We really screwed the format of this.
It's
up.
Fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, the plan was to do trivia and then do our questions, which were a 1, 2, 3 of which character was a standout, what's your favorite jokes, lines, and then rate the episode. Yeah, we're all over.
So the idea is that those questions will come out every episode.
Exactly. So I'll go back to the first question. Not that anyone knows that because they can't see my notes.
No.
As far as they know, this is all how it's supposed to be. Just cut out what I said. Which character was your standout for the episode?
Me? See, I don't know whether this is just my humor or whether I'm going to find this a lot moving forward. Holly's barely in it, but every single line he hits is perfect. I find him hilarious. And we're going to get more into the second episode. In the second episode, he is brilliant. I love Holly. And I don't know whether he was the standout for me in this just because I love him and I find him funny, or whether he was the standout. It's going to be interesting when we get sort of the end of season one to see whether it's just I love Holly more than anybody else or what. But I find him hilarious.
I can, knowing you, see that totally. For me, and I think this was my theater director brain kicking in, it's the cat.
Really?
He's barely in it. But when he shows up, the energy that is lacking a little bit out of the first 2/3 of the show, man,
yes.
It like, he pushes that forward. And of course, like, can you imagine working on the show? Okay, everyone's dead. You're alone. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. You're gonna eat the ashes of all your dead like crewmates. Like,
which I don't get, by the way, why he's dipping his fingers in those and eating. I really don't understand.
It's, as a kid, I never thought about it, but watching, I'm like, all this is doing is to set up a joke, and I don't know why he would eat the powder that's at every station.
Like, nowadays, he'd be like, he'd be snorting the powder. Like, I've been snorting the entire ship's crew. That's what it would be now.
That's true. That's actually absolutely what would happen.
Yeah.
The cat shows up, and man, it pushes things forward, and you realize how much this show is not a binary. It really works better when you've got these kind of triangles.
Yes.
Holly, you know, our other character that'll show up later, and the cat, and Rimmer, and Lister, like, they bounce off each other so well,
yeah.
And it's like missing. And you can feel in the second episode, which we'll get to, like having him there from the beginning, I feel like picks that up. So I put the cat in because once he shows up, man, wow.
Yeah.
I used my whole life since seeing the show. If I'm in a good mood, I will enter the room like the cat, making
awesome.
Those noises and dancing. I've always done that.
I love it when Lister goes to put the Krispies down on the floor. And he's like, well, what you monkeys eat off the floor? And he puts it on the top. You got no decorum, and then continue like slurp them out of the bowl like a cat.
And that is where you're going, classic Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
Like, those kinds of things will, like, be carried out through the rest of the seasons.
But that's so British in the humor, though. It's so British.
But it's so fun to see because you're just, like, those moments particularly, like, oh, man, we're going to get so much more of it. Like when they, as they figure out, like, oh, man, the guys are really good at this kind of thing and this humor together, and it just keeps building. And, I mean, for situational comedies, it's all about strong characters and everybody is so different.
Yeah.
Before we get to the trivia, because this kind of is trivia. Wait, do we have another one?
Jokes.
We have favorite jokes and lines, which we've mentioned a bunch of. Which one did you particularly write down?
See, my favorite one. So I love, the goal, we were talking about how British the humor is and how what very Red Dwarf is. When the captain announces that there's a, Holly's picked up an extraterrestrial being on the ship. And Lister goes, sir, it's Rimmer. That is so British. Like, yeah. I would do that. If that situation happened at work, like a similar thing, that would be something I would say just in my... And whether that's been influenced by Red Dwarf or a British thing or what, I don't know. But my favourite line in the whole thing is when he's talking about his plan. And it's like, I'm going to get myself a little farm on Fiji with a pig and a cow and breed horses.
Yeah.
And it's like, with a pig and a cow? No, with horses and horses. It's just hilarious.
And that is the kind of humor that go. Also, I thought about you when we're not plugging the other podcast, but if you look up Lee, you'll find it. I'm sitting there watching going, oh, hey, look, I couldn't help but think of Lee because we got a Harry Potter reference, yeah, right in this particular scene as Mr. Weasley himself is. Yes. I totally forgot he was in the episode.
Yeah.
And is he ever brought back for flashbacks?
I think so. Yes.
I feel like they went out of their way for some of the flashbacks or things that might occur later to get a lot of the folks that were in this very first episode to do little things.
Yeah. So what are your favorite lines or jokes, Blake? Because this is where this is where the juxtaposition of having an American and a British person could be very different.
This is a very British one. I was torn. So what I think is just a good joke. Is I had the wrong parents. Wrong parents? Whose parents did you have? Yeah. Is like, and he delivers that so earnestly.
Yes.
He really does ask the question, and that's why it works so strong. Yeah. Like this, like, you know, undereducated guy's like, wait, what? That can happen? And of course, we're going to find out things about Lister too. That joke actually makes sense with his upbringing and his life. You know, and that's the other thing that struck me is I'm going, man, I wonder how many things they knew or because of moments like this, they thought, yeah, this is what we should do with the, you know, again, with the character, yeah, and stuff. My favorite, just straight up one liner, just like that, like smacks in the very beginning of the show. That is like, yeah, I want to keep watching this. even if it kind of goes up and down here and there, but like, I want to see more of that. Is that a cigarette you're smoking? No, it's a chicken.
That's very British as well.
And it's just so an American would never, like, it. They might be like, I can't even, all I can think of is like a Biff Tannen thing from Back to the Future. Yes. Like, no, dumbass. It's the quick, no, it's a chicken. And you, in that line, not only do you set some of the kind of humor, but like, you absolutely understand what Lister thinks of Rimmer.
Yeah.
Completely. More so than any other kind of slacking off. That one bit, God. That made me laugh so hard. Also, I think I had just kind of forgotten about that one because it is just a one-liner. But that, oh God, that got me good. I loved that.
That's, like I say, that is such British humor. Those just contradicting any statement like that. It's just, yeah, that's what we do all day long.
As we move into trivia, because we talked about the USA version and I said I was going to get to it. It kind of made more sense to get all through this first.
Yeah.
So the only thing I'll say is I have watched the entirety of the USA pilot. I think you can still find it on YouTube.
It is on YouTube, yeah. So I was watching a little bit of it last night, but I thought I'm going to save it because I think when we've wrapped this up, I think we should do an episode on that.
That's a really good call. That's a really good call. I haven't watched it again in a while. There's a second pilot where they did a 15-minute thing where they changed the cast. They had a female cat. And it's more of like a sizzle reel they filmed that does use a bit of footage from the original show, a bit from the pilot you watched, and then this new character because the cat was not a play by woman in the American first American pilot. So they did two. They tried to shop it twice, but the second one isn't quite a pilot. The first pilot is basically this plot with the exception of they add in a character from later seasons.
Yeah.
I love that we're talking about this as if the show just came out, but whatever, just in case someone's...
Yeah, I really want people who've never watched it before to find us and sort of watch along with us, because it would be really interesting to get people's perspectives on it.
Yeah, I want to know what they think. That show, it... So, again, I think this might go back to what I said earlier, is like, in our media, we tend to want to kind of see ourselves. They did not make the main character of Lister bad enough.
Right.
He's... almost like a sitcom version of old school Mel Gibson. He's almost kind of got a mullet. It makes me think of old Lethal Weapon Mel Gibson times or whatever. Like that's kind of the look he's got. He just isn't bad enough's the wrong word. Like he's just too clean.
If I was
doing it today. So coming from the UK, Why is Lister, why is it smart to make him a Liverpudlian? Why make him from Liverpool?
That's an interesting... So the Liverpudlian accent is an accent that most people around the UK can't stand. Like, they hate that accent for the most part. I don't know, honestly, why they would do that.
But it's known for being, like, a very working class area, yes. too, right?
Yes.
So, like, it kind of works. And it's already, like you said, an accent that gets made fun of. If I was doing this now, not that I'd want this guy to play it, but my thought was, you know why I screwed up? You can't be this dude that's in this American Pilot. I would have put, like, Larry the Cable Guy in it.
Yeah.
You know, man, what?
Yes.
Okay, you know,
yeah.
All right, Earth, home and back. Slime's coming home. I mean, it needed to be someone that's like, this is the last of humanity.
Yeah.
And that guy still looks like someone who can end up rising to be the hero of a story. And you're like, as soon as you do that, it fails. Now, I know that that is pressure from the folks, as again, how stuff is produced in the U.S., where everyone must sign off on it. And if we're going to get the most money, we have to have a quasi attractive guy. That's the rule. And if there's a female character, she's got to be attractive. You know what I mean? Like it.
Yeah.
And you can feel the Americanization. It's why, like, the American Coupling was awful.
Never watched it.
I didn't even realize it only lasted 4 episodes. It tanked. I think that's the problem, is they missed, like, you know, and we're going to get to it in subsequent episodes, but, like, Lister is a grubby dude.
He really is.
He should be someone that he should be someone that you love, that you go, but, you know, if I met this person tomorrow on the subway or something, I would slide down away from them. And I think that just missed the boat with how, and I'm not blaming them. Again, I think they're forced to kind of make the decisions based on, I think it was the 90s, early 90s when they were doing this. And, you know, the most popular show was, like, you know, Friends, with all these attractive people in an apartment.
Exactly.
And to me, that's the biggest reason that it doesn't work, is Lister. The cat is actually not bad.
Okay.
Obviously, the one character shows up is great because he's from the original show.
Yep.
Funny enough, do you know why they used him? They thought he was American when they watched the show.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Isn't that funny? Why would you bring that American guy over? It's so funny.
Wait, you mean Robert Llewellyn? He's even got a Welsh surname. It's like, that should give you a clue.
Right? I don't know who I'd cast now. It's kind of easy to say, like, an Andy Dwyer, Chris Pratt kind of, but actually, I don't think that's too lovable. I do think of more like Larry the Cable Guy, or like I think it's Texas, some thick old West Virginia accent. I mean, like, something that just, like, as you said, most people would, if you put it in your show, it's because you're, like, making fun of the situation or whatever.
So there's another episode at some point when we finish this. We need to blue sky an American remake of Red Dwarf as if it was cast now.
And you know what's great? I'd say these days it would be American, but it would be a mixed U.S. and British cast.
Probably.
That's probably what you would do.
Yeah.
That's good. I'll have to think about that for casting, because that'll be tough.
Oh, I will tell you now where my brain's gone with podcasts. I'm already thinking that when we get away down the line, if this thing takes off, I'm already considering reaching out to, I'd love to get Ed Bye on, or Rob Grant, or even get any of the cast on. And that's me. I will reach out to anyone. If they say no or ignore me, that's fine. But you never know.
I will try to be cool if you make that happen, I promise. Oh, gosh, it'd be so fun to talk to some of those people about, like, you know, especially for, like, probably, I'm sure the conventions or whatever, they've met, like, Americans that, I'm just so curious to know, like, what that is. Because even now, man, I went looking, and I on Reddit and stuff, I find Americans that talk about Red Dwarf, but it feels bigger than I would have imagined it was when I was a kid, but still, it's very small.
Yeah, it is.
Well, should we go to our trivia and wrap us out?
Yeah. But yeah, the trivia, I just grabbed a few bits off IMDb while we were watching the episodes. Just, I thought, some interesting things. So the bit in the episode when Rimmer fails his engineer's exam, when he's got the writing all over his body, and he rolls his sleeve up and he gets the ink all over his hand, and he slams his hand down on the paper and signs his name. He actually signs his real name in that piece of paper, not Arnold Rimmer. He signs Chris Barry.
I love that you put this one in, because I wrote it down when I saw it. That says Barry, right? I'm like, yeah. Which, of course, I bet in the old days on my little 13-inch boob tube TV, like, you probably couldn't read it.
No.
But watching it, even though it's still standard def, but watching it, you know, streamed at its highest quality it can, you're like, you totally read that.
And that's another thing. It actually looks really good. Like, I watched it on BBC iPlayer, and it, considering it's like 36 years old, it still looked relatively good.
Yeah. You know, if the thing that gets improved the most is the sound design as it goes. And I think if you change the sound design to this one, it holds up pretty well, actually.
Speaking of sound, the next bit of trivia I got was, so in George McIntyre's funeral scene, and this is interesting because you've already, your little bit of trivia there that you've already kind of broached, but the song that plays over the top of that on the British version, I'll set you up there, was See You Later, Alligator by Bill Haley, but it was performed by Danny John-Jules, which I thought was pretty cool. And for those that are playing along from the start, Danny John-Jules is the cat.
And he is a song and dance man. That's his background.
Yeah. For a point of reference, he was one, I can't remember what the characters are called, the fire things in Labyrinth that pull the heads off.
Oh,
he's one of those.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Yeah. I did not realize that. Oh, another little connection to my childhood.
Yeah.
That's the movie I rented the most from the library.
I love Labyrinth. It's so cool.
So this leads me into mine because Lee had put this down and I'm reading the content and I'm going, wait, he was? Because when it did, what I had heard it was the here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go.
Yeah, the football chant.
It's the only thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, which is weird. Like when I mentioned it to Tracy when we were watching it, and she's like, oh, I only remember it being here we go. And we have watched it on Netflix. Obviously, we watched it. We weren't together when we were both 12, but, you know, we'd have watched it separately at that point.
And I don't, and when I played in the States, but again, if it were a few years after it came out, those rights, they may have already changed. Or at the time, it also could have been, sometimes there's a weird rights thing between the States and the US, and like you have rights for one, but not in the other, that kind of thing. Same way, like one movie company will be like putting out the movie here, but it's distributed in the UK by a different, like a competitor company. It's weird how that stuff
works.
Yeah,
it's like weird how names change. So, I don't like mentioning them, but we'll talk Disney. So Zootopia, when it came out in the US, in the UK, it was called Zootropolis.
I like that, but maybe that's because I like the old, that's because it harkens to the old, I don't go Superman in my brain, but the old Metropolis.
Yes.
The black and white. I guess what's science fiction?
Yeah.
But the silent film. Yeah, yeah. And I did not realize this.
No, me either.
Because it's not stated in the episode, but when I went back and watched it, it's under there that George McIntyre is Remmer and Lister's immediate supervisor. And I don't know how you pick that up, but I feel like you do kind of pick that up.
Kind of, yeah. Because it's weird. If you look at the episode as a whole, Lister's like the bottom of the bottom and Remmer feels like he's way above him, but yeah, he's not. He's just his immediate superior. So he's like the second bottom of the bottom.
Yeah. Well, and you know, okay, I'm trying to end this pod, but you reminded me of something that like we didn't talk about, which it sets everything up. The idea of a mining company thing, and then a thing goes and kills everyone, and this guy has been on the ship. But this thing also introduces, we are going to get some large sci-fi concepts. The first is, hey, everyone's dead from a radiation leak, but this dude was suspended in animation. So now we know this is a sci-fi world where you can get frozen in suspended animation for long distance travel.
And that whole line when he gets put in the stasis room is hilarious by Todd Hunter. Apparently he couldn't grasp, when he was reading his lines for that, another bit of trivia that I read on there, he couldn't get it right. It took him ages to actually learn that little bit about whereas you are a moment in time, you're not whatever. I can't remember what the exact line is.
You are a mass, but not whole explanation. But that's still kind of like sci-fi we've done before, right? Like Alien has come out, suspended animation, that's been in things, you know, a computer like Holly, you know, an AI, right? We've done that. The one that I think is different is the cat evolving from these series of cats into this humanoid creature, and you're like, oh man, that's a fun sci-fi concept. And if I were watching this for the first time, I would like that and hope they do more. My favorite thing about old classic Next Generation Star Trek is just, here's a one weird, crazy idea after the other, right? You know, and when we get to review our next episode, we get a glimpse at how much they're going to start peeling that curtain back into sci-fi.
There's your
segue to the next one.
Perfect. I think that's the perfect end.
All right. Well, this is the end.
It's been awesome.
Of the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As this episode was called. Thanks for joining us. This has been awesome. This conversation went places I didn't think it was going to.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see if that continues to happen as we look at subsequent episodes. The plan is to release new episodes on the first and third Mondays of each month. So follow us on Facebook at Dwarf Memory for all show updates. Email us your comments and thoughts to dwarfmemory@gmail.com. Thanks to Jeff Royds for creating our theme music and to Brian Cooper for creating our artwork, which, man, when those both showed up, I am so excited.
The pair of them are very good friends of mine and would never forgive me if we didn't give them a shout out.
Well, my wife is a voiceover artist, and to compliment you, she heard our promo and she goes, "He's awesome."
Oh, yeah. No, I'm embarrassed.
She loved it. Yeah. So on this next episode, we're going to be discussing season 1, episode 2, Future Echoes. I think you'll be surprised if it's your first time watching how fast things progress in the universe.
Agreed.
Of Red Dwarf. So make sure you to watch that before you join us on our next episode. And for now, Lee, plot us a course for Fiji. Look out, Earth. The slime's coming home.